I want to thank you for the very good hummus. Yes. I'm vegan, believe it or not. I'm a vegan. And so I'm grateful for the tabbouleh and the hummus. And then when I found out there was falafel, who was the awesome gentleman who told me there was falafel? Where are you, sir? You. You are a bucket of awesome because you... You told me there was falafel, and not only did you say there was falafel, you said there's tons of falafel. And I looked for the falafel, you said it's in the middle, keep going, keep going. And I want to thank the other couple who was standing there actually policing the falafel and pouring tahini all over themselves. Where's that wonderful couple who poured tahini all over themselves? I know you're here. I promised to put you in my story. They're in the corner. They poured tahini all over the place, and it was a great way to meet you. Unconventional, but it was a great way to meet. And so I feel very at home here. Let me tell you why I feel at home here in the synagogue. It's going to be a very interesting little walk with me. I was born in, and I like to share my age because I love the fact that people of color like us, you know, Jews and blacks, we don't age. You know, we drink vampire blood, we don't age. So I like to tell my story. I was born in 1969, and I was born in Park Heights. At the time, you know, it was a very different time. I am the daughter of a teen mother. And while it's not odd these days, it was very odd in 1969. My mother was the oldest of 9 children born to her parents who migrated here from the South. And they came here for a better opportunity post-slavery, post-segregation. And they moved to Park Heights, right at Park Heights and Garrison. And they lived in a little house in the 4700 block of Park Heights and Garrison. You guys are shaking your heads. This is before you guys made your exodus to Upper Park Heights. Before you schlepped to the other side of Northern Parkway. You know very well Garrison. And my grandparents and their 9 children moved into a little house in Park Heights, and my mom was there. And my mom was an amazing young woman, but she had a little situation. And back then, you know, there was 2 things you did with a daughter with a situation. You either sent them down south, or you did an Anne Frank. You put them in the attic. And so... And I'm not saying that to be facetious. They put my mother in the attic. They really did. They took her out of school because my grandparents were a very proud Southern Christian family. And here you come doing this to us. I'm like, no, she did that with him. You guys weren't even there when it happened. Needless to say, when my sister was born, she was the first of the 2 children my mother had. We were raised as my mother's sisters. Isn't that interesting? For the first 2 years, because we went from having 9 children to having 11 children. And back then, that's not a big deal, because there was tons of really big families. And my grandparents, ironically, our last name as maidens was Foreman, so maybe we were Jewish, I'm not sure. But... So my mom was raised as our sister for the first 2 years, and then my mom met my stepdad, who was a very amazing young man, who was an engineer, and my mom moved us to the northwest suburbs. At the time when we moved into that neighborhood, it's right above the Windsor Mill Road, we moved there, and we were the only African-American family on that whole block. And so when we moved in, it was like an episode from a Sidney Poitier movie, like, guess who's coming to dinner? So everybody's window was lifted. Everybody's looking out the window. Nobody looks like us. And mind you, the community that we came from was a working class community. These were hardworking families. My grandparents both, my grandmother worked at Sinai. My grandfather worked right across the tracks in the little place taking apart carburetors. And so these were working class families. And we were very comfortable in our neighborhood because everybody looked like us. And there was codes. There were ethical codes that were unspoken. When the lights came on, you had to be on the front porch. And then after that, you had dinner. And if anything happened, anybody in the neighborhood could tell your grandmother or your grandfather, I saw your daughter, and she was on the corner talking to that boy, and then you were going to get it when you got home. Now, it is relative. You all know it now can get you in prison. But back then, you could get it, and no one would call Child Protective Services on you. Does anybody know what I'm saying about it? So we would get it in my old neighborhood, and we had a very close-knit community. Now, mind you, we had 6 uncles who were our quasi-brothers, and we had 2 aunts who were our quasi-sisters, and we were the younger 2. And so we really loved our life. We didn't want to move to the suburbs. We didn't want to experience the Jefferson experience. You know that show that you're moving on up? We didn't want to do that. Please go Google why you should be laughing at the Jeffersons. And so we move to the suburbs, we pull up, and yes, there's grass and there's lots of trees and it's very dark there, and we weren't comfortable with that. And my mom kept promising us, you're going to love it, you'll have a backyard, and you'll have your own room. And I'm like, we have all that in exchange for this dark, scary place. And I remember the very first day we went to our new school, I'll never forget, Hebbville Elementary School. I don't know if you know anything about the Northwest suburbs, but it was right on Washington Avenue. And I remember waking up, and my mother said, you're going to take the bus to school. The only bus I knew was the Mass Transit in Baltimore City. But this bus looked like a big block of cheese. And she was like, you're going to have to get on that bus. And I'm like, that looks like kids with special needs should be on that bus. And I have special needs. It's not that I have a problem with that. I just didn't want to sign up for it the first day. And so she takes us to school, she signs us in, and I just remember showing up, and I felt really good. You know, I'm like, I look great. I had my two Afro puffs. My mother had sat me between her legs and got the part. Now, you don't know anything about this, but to get a part in an African-American woman's hair or a child, it takes a lot of engineering, and it takes mathematics, and it takes tenacity. My mom had us sitting, and I had the part straight down the middle. The puffs were symmetric. I had the bell bottoms. I had on the vest. I was very Brady Bunchish with a nice puff. I walked into the building, and I'm feeling good. And I remember seeing all these faces that looked nothing like mine. And I'm like, oh, my gosh. And they started staring. And I remember my teacher, God bless her, Barbara Levinson. Hello, dear, how are you? I'm Mrs. Levinson. It's so good to have you here. What's your name, darling? What's your name? I said, hi, Michelle. She says, boys and girls, I need you all to turn around, and I need you to welcome Michelle. Can you do that for me? And they said, welcome, but I really didn't feel welcome because nobody looked like me. There was one other kid that looked like me, and he was cowering in the corner like, go. And when you say, oi, it's complicated, oi, it was complicated. Oi, vey, was it complicated. And I remember the first day we had to catch the bus with the girls, there was a set of twins. I'm not going to tell you their real names because you probably know them. You know how you Jews are. You all know each other. If I say their name, you're going to go tell them it's going to be litigious. I may get sued. I don't have that kind of time. But let's just say their names are Rebecca and Ruth. Can we just say that? Rebecca and Ruth. And Rebecca and Ruth were just these curly-haired girls, and they were very just mischievous, and I remember walking to the bus stop, and they were standing there, and they were just gnawing on these hard donuts with this white paste on it, and I just... Am I losing you on that part? That too graphic? I'm sorry. I had no idea what they were. They were round, but they weren't quite symmetric because a good one is never perfect. You know what I mean? So they're chewing on these hard donuts with this white, it's like Elmer's paste with these little pink squiggly things on top. And they're like, and they're chewing and the paste is all around their mouth. And I'm just standing there on the bus stop and looking at my sister. She's like, and they go, and they're chewing. They go, what's your name? And I was like, Michelle. And they were like, hi, I'm Rebecca, and that's my twin Ruth. And I go, hi. And they go, do you want some? And I'm like, no. So this begins our love affair. Rebecca and Ruth end up being my fast friends. They live right on the corner. They give me the skinny about how they used to live in the city, but then all of their family moved to Pikesville or moved to the Northwest suburbs. And it was much like the Hajj that we made, you know, but it was a different inspiration. And so they're having this conversation. They're really giving me all kinds of insight. I'm not sure what's happening, but we're having this exchange. And one day they say, you should try these. I said, why do you guys eat hard donuts and paste every morning at the bus stop? Because these aren't donuts. These are bagels. You never had a bagel? I'm like, no, I've never had a bagel. They're like, and this isn't paste. This is cream cheese. I said, I've had cheese, but I've never seen cheese like that. They go, do you want to try it? I said, what's the pink things on top? those are locks. I said, I'm not real sure. Maybe I'll go for the donut and paste, but hold off on the pink things. They look too squiggly. You know, black folks, we gotta have stuff that's fried and crunchy. And so let me fast forward. I taste the bagel, and it was like, it was kismet. I fell in love with bagels, and I felt inclined to have some sort of social exchange. So I said, you guys have given me bagels. You've changed me. You've given me bagels. What can I do for you? Please, what sort of solidarity move can I make to seal this new kindred relationship? And they said, you know what? We watched this movie and we saw these girls and they were swinging these ropes, right? And they were doing two at a time and they were jumping in and moving up and down. What is that? And me being a kid, I said, well, that's double dutch. Everybody knows what double dutch is. Just like they thought I knew what a hard donut with paste was, I thought they knew what double dutch was. They was like, double dutch? I said, you know how to jump rope? They said, yeah, we know how to jump rope. I said, but these are two ropes. They said, yeah, can you teach us? And I said, sure. So my sister and I, we go out to the shed, we get some rope, and the deal is we're going to teach Ruth and Rebecca how to double dutch. Can I just tell you? It just was not that easy. There's like little nuances of things that have to be in place in order to facilitate double dutch. One of which is an immense amount, hear me closely, of rhythm. Of which Ruth and Rebecca had none. So thus began this social experiment in exchange for bagels. And it seemed like at the time that this was not a fair exchange. Because once me and my sister started turning this, I said, listen, girls, you gotta jump in when you feel it. And they said, okay. What are we gonna feel? I said, I can't describe it. You're gonna feel it. You're gonna, even turning the rope, there is rhythm. So I tried to demonstrate and I said, you turn with my sister and I'll show you. It just wasn't that simple. So Ruth says, I'll turn. And she turns and my sister says, and one. And then there's this little thing we do, right? She's like, and one, and two, and one, two, three, and. And so my sister's doing it, but Ruth is like. So I'm feeling like I'm having flashbacks, ancestral flashbacks of being beaten by ropes. I'm like, this isn't working out. I have a genetic predisposition to being hit with things. This isn't working out for me. Needless to say, I couldn't quite teach them how to double dutch. But what it did do for me, and it still is a lasting thing in my life today, it created the long-standing dance that I've had with the Jewish community. I have always loved hanging out with my Jewish girlfriends. I always loved when they would teach me the bad Yiddish words. I love... You all know you have some really shady Yiddish words that describe some stuff. And I love when you use them because nobody else knows what you're talking about but you. But every now and again, when I'm sitting in my Mount Washington community, when I'm not on the road, and I take a little trip up to Quarry Lake, and I sit in Starbucks, and I listen to the girls, and they hit me with one of those, they don't even know I know what they're saying. I'm like, oy vey. I want to say that if ever you need me, if ever you need that one young lady who loves and appreciates the Jewish culture, and as much as I love and appreciate being of African descent, because I too did my research, Jennifer, you're not the only one. I searched and I found out I did my DNA testing 2 summers ago, and I found out that my family are from Nigeria on my grandmother's side, and we are of the Nigerian people of the Yoruba tribe. And so I feel very privileged to finally make the connection, much like a lot of you have already done. And so I feel privileged to stand here with you. And if you guys ever, ever need me for any reason, please reach out, because what I love about you guys, your check's clear. Thank you so much.